Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. Max is here. And we're a duo today.
Mm-hmm. Just the two of us.
That's right. We have an interesting show for everyone today. So let's go ahead and summarize what's happening for the pod folks. We're going to start with a Southampton reaction. We just have to. We're supposed to. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do it. It's meh. Big meh. Next, we're going to be talking about... we're going to take it away from the football. Talk about superheroes. All right? Infinity War's out. I haven't seen it. Max hasn't seen it. But we're going to talk about superheroes anyway. Why not? And we're going to finish up with the West Ham preview. Because, yes, we have to go through the motions on another game. One more.
Last one.
Yep. That's right.
Last one.
We see the light at the end of that tunnel. Yeah. And I find it incredibly ironic that we haven't had too much atmosphere at Goodison lately, and we're going to the place with the least atmosphere in the Premier League.
Exactly.
To play our final match of the season.
I know.
I am temporarily calling this the Mediocrity Cup. See what happens. Let's talk about Southampton. Max was there. Max was actually there, and there's proof of this. We don't always have actual physical proof of our guys being at the game. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. I mean, we get Edward there, who you literally will see him in his Insta
Math.
Yeah, in just showing himself in the crowd. But we don't always get Max there because he's more on the shy side. However, you can find Max. There's a Grand Old Team video. If you check out their YouTube channel, they've got match reactions from fans, and Max is one of them. He's not the first fan, as you will be able to see, but he's the second one. Yeah, and he's on the thumbnail. It's a big, huge picture of Max. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't miss it.
It threw me off, I'll be honest. Scrolling through my YouTube, and I'm like, I know him! I don't just know him, I talk to him like every week. This is weird. So yeah, it's really cool. Max is there. He shares opinions. Different type of atmosphere for him. So pretty cool. Enough of that. Let's actually talk about the game. Give us your initial thoughts about this thing that happened.
Well, first and foremost, I just want to start by saying I really feel sorry for Southampton because, you know, the game plan, it was quite evident. Their game plan became quite evident, you know, after the first half in particular, because they came into this game, I think, knowing that they couldn't afford to get beat. They were very solid and they picked their moments to get forward. And they just so unlucky at the end, really. It speaks volumes of how Everton performed to see how the goal went in. It was just, we didn't deserve the goal. I've got to be quite honest with you. I think from an Everton's perspective, though, the first half was absolutely dreadful. I mean, you can't fault, my thing is, you can't fault the effort of the players. I mean, you look at the likes of Morgan Schneiderlin. We've seen Schneiderlin when he couldn't be arsed, basically, and there's a huge difference. It's not as if any of the players have, not willing to play, because there's effort there. They're not, you know, they're pressing. They're always trying to figure out a way. But the quality just isn't there, and it seems, particularly in that first half, we just seem to pass the ball round and round and round. So sometimes it was even in our own half, and it just didn't seem to get any more luxurious than that. Really, I mean, I think the furthest we probably got was in and around their penalty area, but still, as I say, we'd be passing round their box, trying to figure out a way to break through. Going on to the second half, and I tweeted this after the game, it was absolutely dreadful game management by Sam Allardyce, because what he did was, Yannick Bolasie, of course, I think everyone was calling Bolasie for Bolasie to come off, because he didn't have a good game at all. Quite the usual expectation of him now, really. But he was took off at half-time for Ramiro Funes-Mori, and as you said, Jerry, I think the reason he's getting minutes is with the up-and-coming World Cup. So we brought Funes Mori on and went three at the back, and Southampton absolutely loved that. We were so exposed in the fullback areas because obviously Baines and Coleman pushed further up the pitch just to accommodate the, you know, the left and right centre half, and we got done on the counter attack as shown by their goal, Nathan Redmond. And of course, I knew when Nathan Redmond come on, I thought he hasn't scored all season. I know exactly what's going to happen.
It's
and you know, lo and behold, that's what happened. But you know, fair play. I think when they did score, the crowd jumped on, not so much jumped on the players' backs, but again, they got riled up. The Allardyce chance started again, and I think that really got to the players. I think the players kind of thought, come on, we need to start playing our football a few yards further up the pitch. And, you know, as I said, our goal, it wasn't a moment of quality. It was just pure fortune. And I'll admit it now, I was halfway out the ground before that goal went in. I had my back turned and was walking out the ground, and I just heard, oh, and I thought, oh, God. Soon as you hear the kind of anticipation from the crowd, you're thinking, God, you're going to have to run back to your seat here. And I heard, you know, the Gladys Street went off. And it wasn't, because I think we haven't celebrated something like that in a while. I mean, I know the last minute goals always tend to gloss things over, but I think Evertonians just needed that. Evertonians needed something to celebrate, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got it in the end.
So I did not watch this live. Okay, it was the late game for us in the States on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So for us that puts it at 12:30. Okay, lunchtime.
Yeah.
My kid had a match. He plays with a Spanish language team, so it's a lot of Mexican players that he plays with. It's pretty cool. Just started that. So he had one of those. So I had recorded it, put it on the DVR, and then I saw. I get the updates on my phone, you know, Everton, the app is telling me that we got scored on and then we scored, a game over. I hate it because I usually don't want to know what happened, you know, but I thought, well, we might not be able to watch the game tonight. Okay. So, and I didn't get to watch it until Sunday night. Finally, Sunday night, I got to watch it and I saw everybody just so much shit talking, basically saying that we didn't deserve it. It was one of the worst played games that we've had. And so I saw all that. When I watched it, it looked like two teams scrapping. It just, it looked like unattractive football. You know, there was one point, and I'm trying to remember if it was first half or second half. It was near the box where literally we were trying to get it out of the box, push it out of the box, and we'd get just beyond it. Southampton would slide in, you know, take it. They would get the ball for a second. We'd slide in and take it. It was like back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I was thinking, this right here, this is what epitomizes this game. Ugly, scrappy football, you know, and that's indicative of a team that's in a relegation fight.
Yeah.
All right. So we were dealing with that. So that's the only thing I've had to try to keep this in perspective. It's just because I don't actually think they had a lot of beautiful opportunities on goal.
No.
The one that they had, that cross was money. Okay. Suarez putting, putting that in, and it was perfectly placed on Redmond's head. Yeah, that's true. Okay. And the header was good. It was well placed. Pickford maybe could have done better.
Yeah.
All right. But he was trying to make himself wide. Which is, I think, is what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, it was well done by them. The person I thought at fault to me for that one seemed like Kane. All right, because the guy got in behind him.
Yeah.
But then here's my thing. Haven't we talked about this? Kane needs structure. He needs consistency. He needs to be in a back four.
Yeah.
Not a back three. When Big Sam switched formation, okay, that right there, that threw him off. And I'm not defending him, by the way, all right, because I think he should be flexible. He should be able to play in a number of systems. But right now he can't, all right? He's not used to that other stuff. He's tried it in games. It always goes bad.
Yeah.
All right? And this was no exception, and it happened again, all right? So Keane probably could have done better. Pickford maybe a little better, but I don't want to blame anything on that guy ever. Yeah, so whatever, no. You know what I mean.
he was the only lad at halftime. Obviously, you'll probably have seen it going around on Twitter. But at halftime, when they blew up, just the boo boys were out in full force again. You know, everything was just getting booed, with the exception of Jordan Pickford.
Yeah,
I think Jordan Pickford was one of the last players to come off the pitch, and as he kind of walked around, the fans that were near him, you know, they were clapping him, giving him well wishes, and.
Yeah.
No, you can't really blame Jordan Pickford for anything this season, can you? And I mean, you only have to look at the Dixies, as they call it. And it was pretty much Jordan Pickford awards, wasn't it? And it fully deserved.
And his attitude is great. I mean, despite the fact that it's been a difficult season by our standards, he's just put his nose down and worked hard.
Yeah.
He's just a professional. So, yeah. I try to overlook the fact that ball did go between his legs. All
yeah.
right.
yeah.
It did happen, but I still don't think it was mostly his fault. So those are my two players. Keane was my player that I thought could have done better there for the most part. Yeah. And Bolasie. I thought Bolasie did not play well again. Okay. No. And when I saw him in and I saw Walcott not even on the bench, I mean, even my kid was not happy, and he's five and he knows better. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, we miss Walcott a lot there. I think
we miss a little winger depth.
Mm,
so there's that. Not gonna say it, dude. Not gonna say it.
I had that on Twitter.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know if you followed it, but if you don't know what we're talking about, him, he plays in Germany, and he had a pretty good weekend last weekend.
And he's not a tall fellow, and he wears braces. And he could have been really helpful this season. Maybe really good opposite Walcott. Just saying.
We'll see.
So there's that. as far as players who played well, players that came in and actually it seemed like they excelled, all right? I don't think we have many. I don't think we have many where you point to them and say, that guy came to play. I got one. All right.
Go on. I want to see if it's the same as mine. Just say yours first.
Second half, this guy came in, changed the game, way more energy. We had legitimate chances with him in. Omar. We had way more energy when he came in.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And he almost got an assist. Do you see that ball? It glanced. It just barely hit the tiny bit of Tosin's hair. But yeah, he almost got that.
Yeah, but I mean, credit to Umar. I think we've said it plenty of times this season. He is that player that you bring off the benches, and he's the player that. And much to my surprise, it wasn't Tosin coming off in his place. I was really surprised that he actually went for the two up front. And how much did it? You know, as you say, how many more chances were provided for Tosin just with Umar on the pitch? I tweeted after the game, and I was watching Cheng Tosin, and I was thinking, Jesus, he's so isolated at times, and you know, and he deserves a lot of credit, Cheng Tosin, because he never kind of uses that as an excuse.
No.
I think you see plenty of times players, when centre forwards in particular, when they're isolated, when they aren't getting a good enough support, you'll see them wave their arms about, you'll see them in a strop, but you never see Tosin like that, and that's really to his credit, because the lad works his socks off every time he's on the pitch. You know, he's not the quickest, but he'll chase everything down. He'll always, he'll always be on the back of the defender trying to pick up on any mistakes that he makes. But I think that game really said to me that we need to start playing someone up with him. In my opinion, personally, I think we need to go for someone with a bit more quality than Umar.
And
I think my opinion on Umar is well documented, to be honest. I mean, I love him to pieces, and I really can't fault his attitude. He's probably got the best attitude of anyone in that squad, really, to come back from where he'd have to come from. May I also add, I thought he was the most well-dressed at the Dixies as well. That suit was spot on. And but as I say, I think we need to kind of, as you say, it's a huge summer coming up, and I think we need to just get like a second choice striker that we'll even play up front alongside Tosin of just a higher quality, maybe even a lad with a bit more pace. Just because obviously Cheng's a very steady, controlling player, and you've got someone with the legs, you know, say if he can just knock it onto him, well, and get in behind the defence. But that's for the summer, and time will tell.
I agree. I think we need. I think I see Omar as a third choice striker, and the only reason is, I mean, he lacks some football skills.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually think, believe it or not, he finds a way to get in very good positions.
Yeah.
So I think there's more to his footballing brain than was sold us earlier, because he finds a way. Effort-wise, he's there. He has speed, and there's a lot of physicality. For a guy whose arms are pretty thin-looking, he actually does a decent job of holding off defenders.
Football.
Yeah. I still think he's a third-choice guy. He's an effort guy. He's a spark plug. You need a spark, you bring in Omar. You know, I'm totally fine with that. I just think if you want the option of playing two up top, I just don't think Omar is that guy.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe DCL, when DCL's back to full fitness. I think that's something that I've said as well. I think, you know, Tosin would benefit with having someone up with him, and I think DCL would benefit from having someone up with him as well. So, you know, give the two of them the run together, and next season we'll see if that works.
I'd like to see DCL take a turn as far as maturity goes for clinical finishing. I think he's a good passer. I think he combines well with other players. He's got a great touch and very good vision. I've been that young forward who's been in good goal scoring opportunities before, and it takes you a while to get consistent. You know, Cenk Tosun is seasoned, so when he gets a chance,
he takes it.
It's his. You know, and that makes sense because he's seasoned. DCL is a young guy. It's going to take him a little while. You know, that's why I'm still not completely sure about him being our second striker.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with you completely. And to his credit, though, he was thrown in at the deep end this season.
We have to
put a lot of responsibility on his shoulders when he's really not being ready for it. And he's handled it extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Quite ironic that he's ended up with a stress fracture in his back.
Yeah.
The bloody responsibility that he's had to take care of. But,
it's reality kind of turning literary a bit. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And I think this season really would have been a season that he'd benefit from going out on loan and, you know, say in the Championship where he's playing up against bigger, slower defenders that he could really, you know, get used to. And obviously, as you say, being clinical and taking your chances that would develop over the season. But, you know, we'll see how next season goes for him.
I agree. I think he and Kenny could have used something like that, but both of them were thrown in with more responsibility than they should have had this season.
Yeah.
And I think they both did well, but having somebody in there like the players who we brought in, who came in and got healthy, Coleman, we looked better. Tosin, we looked better. You know, these are players who are kind of, they're there already.
Yeah.
Finished product. So, yeah. One other brief bit we should mention. A lot of conflict around about Davies again, about whether or not he played well. So I'm of two minds because I looked for it after I heard everybody kind of again.
Yep.
Talking trash. I watched for it. I thought his defensive responsibilities he did very well.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran very hard. But again, he gave the ball away very cheaply.
Like everyone else, though, in my opinion.
That's true. That is very true. I'm a big Davies guy. I like him a lot. I think he's a smart player, and I think he's the type of player we need at our club. However, I think trying to rely on him every game right now is difficult.
Yeah. Something that I noticed in that game as well, he was taking on set pieces, wasn't he? He was taking on corners and he was taking on free kicks, and that's something that we've never seen from him before. So, you know, as you say, in terms of, you know, the burden that he's carrying, he seems to want to be taking a lot more on.
He wants it. And I love that.
Exactly. You can't fault that. And of course, obviously, if he's come into this game thinking, you know what, I actually want to have a crack at some of the corners and some of the free kick, that's obviously a responsibility that will be chipping away in his mind. But as far as giving the ball away is concerned, as I said, everyone else did that, and Again, this to me, because as I said earlier, I don't think it's anything to do with the player's effort, the player's levels of effort. It's a confidence, and I think that again it comes full circle to the manager and looking for the angles for the 1-2s, for the forward passes, for the movement. That's something that should be coached. That stuff's coachable. And I think it goes to show that really the lads that we've gone in at the minute in the coaching staff just really aren't providing the right tools for us to work with, because that's really the thing that I could kind of dragged out of that game, is that if we had a different coaching staff there that are more experienced, not experienced, because I don't want to be taking away the experience of Sam Allardyce, because of course he's a very experienced man, he's got a very experienced staff, but a staff with more of a winning mentality and a way to beat teams that we should be beating comfortably. I said before this game it should be a formality, we should start beating the teams that are well below us, and after doing it against Huddersfield and at home as well, we somehow struggled. And I know of course that's not me underestimating the fight in Southampton and fully I'm fully expressing my sympathy onto them for really, because they didn't deserve that, but as Everton Football Club you should be expecting more.
With Davies, I just usually see him putting together one of the two. Either he struggles defensively or he struggles on the attack. It's hard for him to kind of put both together. But again, I didn't come away from that game pointing my finger at him. I didn't. Because I was watching everybody,
Yeah.
I did notice, so you mentioned earlier there was a Funes Mori sighting. There was also a Devi Claassen sighting.
Alert
the media.
Yeah.
Write about it in your journal later. Mm. Are you kidding me? Claassen played and was not the worst.
No, that was fantastic. The crowd loved that as well. The crowd really to see come on. The lad ran his socks off. I mean, hopefully that is an indicator that he's not going to leave in the summer really. And again, credit to him and his mental state for not wanting to jump ship after the way he's been treated this season. But it was great to see him on the pitch.
I'd love that. It would be great if he stayed, because I want to see what happens with a different setup. I'm worried. I'm worried because of his treatment. This he's lost an entire year of his life, pretty much. It's been a bad shake for him this season. Thought he played all right. Wasn't stunning. Didn't change the game or anything. But I was glad to see him on. And I didn't think he played poorly. He didn't play like a player who had been on the bench for almost the entire season. Not even on the bench.
Not even on the bench.
And he did hear that he got chewed out before the game even started, supposedly by the coaches for not trying hard in warm ups or something. There was a rumor going around about that.
That angers me, that, because I saw the lad on the sideline, obviously, because where I'm seated, when I see go the game where I'm sat, it's not far from where the substitutes warm up, and the lad didn't stop. The lad didn't stop, and that's sending a message, I think, as a player. If you're staying out there warming up, even after subs have been made, it's saying to your coaches, just play me, I'm putting the effort in and I'm working hard. But as you say, hopefully a change in management will bring the best out of him.
Yeah, supposedly he was not going very hard before the game. So, anyway. There was also a rumor that Silva was there, but I don't think that was true. So, yeah. Really quickly, three-word reviews, okay? From Instagram, Miriam Foster, 7263, says, almost fell asleep. Sean H, 1982, says, we still premiership? Pretty good question. From Facebook, John Jones says, yet more dross. That's a word I don't say often in my life, but it's true. Barry Foster says, very, very lucky. Martin Lloyd, in the same vein, says, we mugged Saints, which I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Accurate.
From Twitter, Stephen Reeves says, no interest whatsoever. Andy Barnes says, asleep in sunshine. And my personal favorite, that has nothing to do with Everton, from Instagram, your mum and stuff, says, my name's Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff. I would rather focus on your name. So I believe that is it for our Southampton reaction. Nonplussed is maybe the word. So, it's something that happened. And in a week or two, we might not remember it. So there's that. We are moving on. We need to discuss... we don't need to, but we want to. We need to move away from the football a little bit. Because, you know what? We just... Lately, we've just been talking about nothing but football. So let's get away from it, because right now, pretty timely, right now is one of the crowning achievements in comic book adaptation history. The enormous film Avengers Infinity War that has, like, every Marvel character ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Now, I've read the graphic novels, okay? And I read them before I knew a whole lot about the characters.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult to figure out what in the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I read it and I had to keep reading sections before. I was like, who is this guy? I've never heard of this character before. It was actually pretty damn agitating, if I'm honest. And it was just, it reminded me of the third Lord of the Rings movie, like all action. And no character development. Okay? So, I was really worried about this movie. Because I thought, if it's all action, I need a healthy blend of character development and action. I need those two. And I'm worried this is going to be action, action, action. And to really appreciate it, you need to have seen all the other movies beforehand. Because that's where your character development happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, what do you think? Are you even going to see this movie?
You're gonna kill me when I say this, but I'm not an Avengers guy. I've never the Avengers just hasn't appealed to me.
And that's okay, because honestly, I've never seen one in the theater.
I don't know why they just didn't appeal to me. It's all Marvel, isn't it? So it's like, what is it like? I think I watched the first Thor. I really enjoyed the first Thor. I thought it was really cool. Out of all the Marvel comics, obviously Spider-Man, but my I think something that I struggle to adapt to is, obviously, you know, when the actors change for a superhero, I struggle to get on board with it.
I understand. Spider-Man
is and always will be Tobey Maguire.
And I get that. I do, because I liked the first two Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. I liked those.
Batman is and always will be Christian Bale.
Oh, see, I'm conflicted about that. Because my very first Batman was Adam West in those old Batman shows that used to come on before the cartoons on Saturday mornings. Those were funny. But the first Batman that I thought, oh my God, awesome movie, was Batman 89 with Michael Keaton as Batman. Who would ever think Michael Keaton could play Batman and Bruce Wayne? But he's great in it.
I'm not sure. Who was the Batman 98? I'm trying to think what Batman I would have grew up with. What about Clooney?
Val Kilmer and Clooney took up, like, I'm trying to remember which one was first. But, yeah, either way, it doesn't really matter. To me, like, neither one of those guys worked for me.
I just... You know, when there's just career-defining performances from actors as superheroes, and you just think you've just knocked it out the park, and you will always be that superhero to me.
Yep.
I think I'm like that with Christian Bale.
Yeah, and that's one. I was actually going to mention those movies as being one of the strongest comic book adaptations in terms of superheroes. I thought that series is amazing.
Yeah, you've just bringing up the series. You've just kind of made me think it might not even be Bale. It might just be Nolan, to be honest.
I was going
to
say Nolan. I mean, Bale's great. Don't get me wrong. He's an amazing actor. But Nolan, I think, is the reason why that series is so...
Unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable.
You know, and I grew up, actually, with the Superman movies. Okay?
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve... And my favorite of those was Superman 2. And I don't, they actually brought the plot of Superman 2 back recently in Man of Steel, I think,
mm-hmm.
with the fellow other Kryptonians, like, kind of crash landed on Earth, and they have superpowers too, and they're all bad.
Yeah.
Zod, you know, and so, yeah, that's my favorite, the old school Superman movies. They came in, there's these three bad superheroes, but they're super villains, you know, and they have the same powers as Superman, but there's three of them. And dude, that's one of my favorite superhero movies.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I am gonna say, because I watched it in the pictures, and at the time, I'm trying to think, I don't think we talked about the Nolan trilogy there. Mm-hmm. At the time, I probably thought nothing would ever beat the Nolan trilogy. But I watched Logan in the pictures.
I heard that's really good.
Oh my god, it's absolutely incredible. It was. I think the big thing for me is with superhero movies, they need to end on something that can give it series a continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the fact that they had the kids in it, and the fact that they can go on to make movies about the kids now. Hugh Jackman in that film is absolutely incredible.
Now, see, that's what I like about... I like the simple films, the simple superhero films, the ones that are... You've got your main superhero, and they have a character arc, and they have a plot, and they weave those together, and it's satisfying to me.
Yeah.
So, Logan, I had no interest in, but it didn't surprise me when they said it was good. You know, I heard Ant-Man is solid. And that's a simple, you know, that's about him. Same thing. Deadpool is one of my favorite. Holy hell, yeah. Deadpool is amazing.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. But that works as a good comedy as well.
Yeah. I think super. I love it when they put a comedy spin on superhero films. I think people might agree with me on it. I think The Incredibles is one of the best superhero movies ever.
I forgot. I've watched that movie repeatedly because I have kids. And I've been dying for a sequel to that since it first came out. And I was like, I mean, I think I was like 21 or something. It came out and I was expecting sequels like the next year because I thought that series really lent itself, that franchise, it lent itself to sequels.
Yeah.
And it never happened. And I was like, what is the deal? You guys keep churning out amazing Toy Story sequels, but you can't get in it. You know, I didn't even think there should have been sequels for those. And they're great.
The audience for this The Incredibles sequel is going to be strange, isn't it? It's just going to be like all kids my age, really, because it came up when I was quite young, so it's just going to be full of like 19, 20 year olds just going to see it.
I will tell you, my kids are batshit crazy for Incredibles.
Yeah, my little sister loves The Incredibles as well. She's 7. I think it's fantastic, and particularly in the fact that it's animated as well, and it's still absolutely flawless.
Yeah. My kid likes Dash.
Yeah, I love Dash. Dash is the one I just proper wouldn't go to, because I remember when I was a kid, I just saw him blonde and quick, and I was like, I want to be Dash.
Yeah. See, my kid also likes The Flash, too. He just likes really fast superheroes. Yeah. That's his thing, you know. Trying to think. Those are sort of my... And I totally forgot about Incredibles. I think it's a really good call. But those are sort of my favorite superhero films. There's several now. There's some really good superhero TV series. Like on Netflix, freaking Daredevil is so good.
I don't know why. They haven't appealed to me. I just know that there's been a boom of them over I'd say like the last 5-10 years that they've just been getting churned out and churned out and churned out. And there's been so many crossovers and...
Yeah.
I suppose if you've read all the comic books, then obviously it's like the best thing ever. But I grew tired of them, and it just went off them completely. And I thought, for a while, I just didn't watch any superhero films at all. But one night, he came around and said to me, "Right, just sit, pick one that's got a sequel, and watch them both." And I watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and that, I think that that's me benchmark for like a modern superhero movie now. You know, the way they do like multiple characters and the investment in the multiple characters. I think that was absolutely fantastic. The cast for that was really good as well. It shocked me when I found out Bradley Cooper was in it.
Yeah, no, he's amazing. I love him as Rocket. It's so good, and I love the professional wrestler that plays Drax the Destroyer.
Batista, yeah.
Oh my god! Yeah, him talking about like the idea of him not, the fact that he takes everything literally.
Yeah,
it was like it would not go over my head because I would catch it. That I don't know why I love nerdy jokes like that. Yeah. And I was just giggling like an idiot whenever he was talking. Whenever he took something literally, I was like, yes. But see, Guardians, my wife didn't like it as much because she didn't understand some of it. She knew nothing going into it.
The soundtrack needs a shout out.
Oh gosh, yeah, of course.
Oh, amazing.
But again, go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna say carry on with what you're saying.
But I was gonna say that my big issue with the Guardians films is actually one of the reasons why you liked it, is because there are so many characters.
Yeah.
And I prefer it to be, you know, here's your main character, and here's your main character's journey, and that's my preference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I write a script, I don't write a script with like eight multiple characters and going back and forth. I like one person.
I know what you mean. You know? And obviously, because I think there's been a growth in so many crossovers and things like that. I really thought, come up with something a bit more original that hasn't been done before. And obviously, like I'd never come across the Guardians before, and I remember watching it and thinking, God, this is just like a new take on it. Like, it's new superheroes, you know what I mean? And the concept of it's, you know, pretty cool. The fact it's the entire galaxy. It's not stereotypical in that it's one planet and the planet's changed and you know, things like that. It's just really innovative, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it on Blu-ray. I've watched it a lot, and I can't wait till my kids can watch it. You know what I mean? Because it's funny and it's clever. You know, I think it's a fun movie. It's not one that changed my life, because sometimes a good superhero movie can connect with you here.
Yeah.
Because you really identify with it. You identify with their abilities. You identify with their situation, something. You know, I notice a lot of people who identify with Batman also identify with Iron Man. And that's their favorite because it's somebody who doesn't really have superpowers.
Yeah, I thought I was just going to say, I saw the first Iron Man. I loved the first Iron Man.
It's good.
But again, it was just one of them, you know, where they're just churning out sequels for what seemed like the sake of churning out sequels. And I just lost my interest in that.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends who are big Batman fans, like, and they also love Iron Man. And it's that making things using your brain, finding your own way, you know, being not just smart, but also creating, like, you know, finding your own solutions. You know what I mean? And it's funny that Batman became big in America. Like, Superman was big in America during the 80s when everybody thought everything is fine with the economy. Everything's la, la, la. And Superman is just super. There's no, where's the flaws? And of course, I grew up with Superman, and I'm a cornball goober, so of course I had to love Superman. But Batman came out, and I know a lot of my friends who are big into tech and construction and stuff like that, they love Batman.
Yeah.
And they love Iron Man, and they both, that's their thing. So it's, I find it fascinating how certain periods in a country's history or an area's history can lend itself to like the psychology of the superheroes that it's creating, or that's popular at that time. I think that's that's interesting. And I always think it's interesting how the psychology of a superhero can connect with a person and who they identify with. You know, my friend is a guy, he's a big guy, and he's a battler, gets in a lot of fights, you know what I mean? And because he used to get picked on a lot when he was younger, so guy loves Hulk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's got issues with his temper and stuff like that, but he's a big Hulk fan, and it's funny how that works,
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So, keeping that in mind, I thought it'd be cool if we figure out the superheroes. You say the four, and we need to stick with Marvel just because that's what's out right now. So the four superheroes for me, you, David, and Edward. All right? And then I'll say my four. And I want to see if there's any overlap or similarities.
I'm going to say Edward's Captain America
Okay.
because, you know, he always flies the flag for the Blues, doesn't he? No matter what, he always seems to have a positive attitude towards the Blues.
Okay.
David, I'm going to say Thor
Okay.
because of his beautiful beard. And for yourself, to be honest, no, actually, I was thinking about it now. You should be Captain America, shouldn't you? Really? Technically, you're the one that gives the continental feel to the podcast. Right. Okay. I'm gonna switch it up. Edward can be Iron Man.
All right.
Yeah. Right. That makes sense. Edward can be Iron Man because obviously he's in with all his tech, isn't he? He knows how to handle all the cameras and all the technology. Bit of a
Interesting.
Tony, got a bit of Tony Stark in him. And obviously, you're thinking about it, a bit more logic to the situation. You are Captain America because you hold all of this stuff together.
Right, so what are you?
I don't know. I'm not. To be honest, the missus would probably say I'm the Hulk. With
Oh,
me,
yeah.
with me, with me temper at times, so I probably have to go for the Hulk.
All right. So I did it differently, but I did say because Captain America is like, you know, the toothpaste commercial, the cheesy, like, you know, always trying to have a good attitude and smile through it, you know what I mean? And uphold values. So yeah, I'd say I'd probably have to be Captain America. I actually said Edward would be Spider-Man because Spider-Man is the young kid who, you know, if you get him involved with the older like people who've maybe had more experience and they're like, "Hey man, why are you doing it like that? What are you doing?" You know, so many times Edward has that happen where he's saying something and we're like, "Huh, that's not how we were thinking of doing it." And he's like, "No, stop." You know. So, I feel like he would be Spider-Man. David, I actually said Iron Man just because I feel like, you know, Tony Stark is the guy who is very visible. You know, he's a superhero and he doesn't hide it. You know, and he's constantly on the go, constantly doing things. And I feel like David's like that. He's everywhere. And he's one of out of our group, he's one of the more visible ones 'cause he goes to a lot of additional games, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I would say that. And I had you pegged for Thor because
The reasoning behind this will be good. Go on.
Number one, I don't think you're loud. I think you're kind of reserved. If we were like out in a public place, I think you would keep yourself to yourself. You would talk to us, but not the people around us. You know what I mean? And additionally, I feel like you've got a moral code where that you sort of stick to. And there's certain ethical stuff where you're like, you know what? I would do that, but I disagree with it ethically. You know? And I feel like that's the way Thor is. You know what I mean? He's got a code that he sticks to. So
Interesting.
yeah. That's the way. That's the way it turns out. I'd be curious what Edward and David would say about this.
I know. Toffee Blues Avengers.
Yeah. So yeah. We have no idea if we're going to see this in the theater. Max probably will not. And if I go, I'd probably have to go by myself. So doubtful I'll get to see it then either. But hope everybody else enjoys it. John is watching it right now. So, John, hope you're digging it, man. So we have to talk about the next match. It's happening whether we want it to or not.
We do. Last one.
Yes.
Get it out of the way.
Yes.
This is done. It's finished. We don't have to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, and we can start looking to... We can start obsessing about transfer news and new manager news and new director of football and... Hey!
Get your... Can't wait for it.
The ITKs are getting their typing fingers ready.
They're going to come out in full force, aren't they?
They are. We're going to hear... It's going to be... We're going to hear some whoppers. We're going to hear some legit whoppers. Yeah. And some of them are going to be right. That's the thing. Some of these people are going to be right. So... How to separate the wheat from the chaff? That's not easy. Maybe we should talk about that sometime. So, really quickly, Mediocrity Cup. Who will win? We shall see. We'll be at the vacuous void that is West Ham's new stadium. So, if you... no one can hear you scream there, literally. No one can hear you scream. All right. So, West Ham's current form is they are 15th in the table with 38 points. They've actually, I mean, they got a win recently, which is one of the things that really kind of put them out of reach. They 2-0 over Leicester, and they had a good game.
Played well. Cracking goal for Mark Noble as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was nice. That was ridiculous. Yeah.
Rocket, you dream about scoring them ball first. You're on the edge of the box and you just lace it. Keeper's got no chance.
It's funny. Great strike. I hear Mark Noble, I immediately think red card. I immediately think the guy.
Two-footed challenge.
Every time.
Ragging a fan when a fan ran on the pitch.
Yep. Yeah. But you forget that there is some football ability there. You know, that it is present there. That goal is evidence of that. Yeah. A good player doesn't accidentally. Or a crap player doesn't accidentally do that often. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, anyway, that happened. Before that, though, they had lost to City, you know, 4-1. They lost to Arsenal 4-1. Yeah. And by the way, we are recording this on a Tuesday, so the Thursday game has not happened, so we don't know. We'll see what actually. Their possible lineup. Going to start with Adrian in goal. Not Joe Hart. It's probably what I should have just said in the first place. Just say not Joe Hart is starting in goal. funny, interesting story when you hear Moyes talking about how he's interested in keeping Joe Hart because of his professional attitude after he was benched.
David Moyes all over that, isn't it? That's David Moyes just all over.
Yeah, and what's really funny is one of the reasons Koeman didn't want him is because... the main reason is that Hart was not cool with if he had to be benched or not. He wanted to be guaranteed playing time. And now you hear Moyes complimenting Hart on like the opposite, which is interesting. So Adrian in goal, who I still don't really like since that shootout when he was giving Joel shit like right before his kick. Still don't like that guy.
When he took his gloves off. Mid run up.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, that would hurt. I owed my friend who's an irons guy after that one in a bet. It wasn't cool. So anyway, we're gonna move past the keeper now. Declan Rice, Ogbonna, who you should be familiar with everybody.
Yep.
Aaron Cresswell, Zabaleta, yeah, and Mazuaku, I think, would be those five main defenders, or Patrice Evra. You know, we could see him there. But they're kind of going three in the back, two of his wing backs, so essentially five. But you know, then you could see Kouyaté and Noble. You might see Obiang get in there because I believe he's healthy now. But João Mário, who scored at the weekend, Lanzini. Who's a clever little player, and Arnautovic, who's kind of taken on a striking role this season.
It's
paid off. He's actually scored.
Dare I say I'd like him at Everton, maybe?
He already used us for a new contract. You remember that?
Yeah.
Everybody was saying, oh, we're going to get Arnautovic, and I was like, well, you know, big good inconsistent player, but he's got some good highlights, so maybe he could do something for us. And then he signs a contract with Stoke. He was using us.
I remember. Oh, yeah, when he was at Stoke. But I think now he's really come into his own, hasn't he? I think Moyes has come in and said, listen, you know, I mean, I know we you know, we give Moyes the run of the mill, but to his credit, like, we know he's, you know, he's a really good man manager and he can get the best out of his individual players. And I think he's really turned Ralph's one out of it and said, you know, you need to start pulling your weight in this side because in terms of quality, I think he's probably about the best that they've got. And, you know, it's showing now. It's like, you know, I think he scored in the last few games as well. And he looks like a really good, not so much a focal point, because I think there's more to his game than just being, you know, a tall centre forward, because he seems like he can move it about well with his feet. But as I say, I think he'd be a useful player at 11.
It's interesting, because I do think he likes being the man. And I think that's one of the reasons he might be thriving, is because it's sometimes it's easy to kind of disappear on the wing. Play naturally drifts to the other side. It happens. And frankly, I think you see most players, most of the inconsistent players are always wingers. Whenever you hear of inconsistent players, they're on the wing. Putting him in the center, I feel like he's getting more touches in more dangerous areas. And he's got a shot on him. He was my main danger man that I was going to say. You know, so it's interesting because the Moyes has changed a lot about this West Ham squad. And I feel like the Iron supporters have been, you know, angry for a while this season. But if he steers them to safety, they may still want a new manager. What's that
like? Yeah, I think that's the case. I know. But I think we can say, you know, we can share our empathy there, really, because we understand what it's like to have Moyes as your manager when things aren't going so well. I mean, I know he stayed at us for, you know, a long period of time in comparison to the usual managerial reigns these days. He stayed, you know, at a very long period of time. But again, we did have those experiences of wanting him out and wanting someone a bit more progressive. But yeah, I think, and rightfully so, really, that they're wanting a new manager.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's across the board, but, you know, I see some Iron supporters on Twitter.
Yeah, same. I've seen a lot of that, really, and that's what I'm going off.
Yeah. So let's sort of move past their lineup and get to ours, which will, I think, depend entirely on injuries. Okay, will Rooney or Walcott be healthy? It will have been a week. So if they're just little knocks, you know. However, I'm wondering, this is the question, do we think they're going to just be safe with them and keep them there regardless because this game doesn't really matter so that they can play some other players who haven't gotten to play as much?
Possibly, yeah. I think that could be the case. But one thing I will say is the injury to Rooney. As soon as I saw Rooney wasn't in, you know, even on the bench against Southampton, that really pissed me off. Because how many times have we said here, it's all about how you use Rooney. Don't burn him out. You can't play him week after week after week. Yep. And as soon as he had this bust up with Sam at the Derby, Sam gave him a run in the side, and lo and behold, look what's happened. You know, I think, what was it? A calf and a knee for the pair of them.
Yes.
I think the Theo's on his calf, something like that. But it seemed like quite a, you know, a wear and tear injury, and it's simple stuff. I think when we brought Rooney in, I think that should have been one of the main points of discussion, is that, you know, Wayne, I know you want to play a lot and you want to play as much as you can, but given how you are now, given your age, given the fact you're not as physically dominant or as fast as you once were, we can't afford to play you every game because you're going to blow out, and you are a very useful player to have. So we do need you fit and ready to go for these moments, as shown by the home game, where at the Dixies, he won the best individual performance in that home game against West Ham, where he got that hat-trick. But in terms of our own team, as you say, I think we should... I don't know. Will Theo be fit? Because I think Theo was a key component that was missing from the Southampton game for us.
Agreed. Completely. You know, that was the thing I thought we were missing the most. You know, we can always rely on him to give us some sort of explosive attack up the side. But I feel like he's also not getting credit for his interchange, the play he has, the combination play that he has with other players. He combines well. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you see from an Arsenal player.
Yeah.
You know, he combines well. He's constantly trying to 1-2 up the field. We missed him a lot.
Yeah.
Rooney, I immediately thought, oh, he's been benched because of his play hasn't been that strong lately. Which it hasn't, you know. But
no.
So it was one of those things where I wasn't sure what to believe. I do think there are certain players who are World Cup bound that are shoe-ins to start. You know?
Hit me with them.
Pickford, Keane, Gay, and honestly, Vlahovic. If Vlahovic gets enough time, he could be on that roster.
Yeah.
Okay, for Croatia. I've heard initially that he had some hopes, and then when we didn't play him, his hopes faded. And now all of a sudden, he's getting time.
Yeah, he's getting a run.
Okay, I think that's very strategic. I think it's interesting. Nias has been playing every game. Okay, that's strategic. They're doing that on purpose. And also, Funes Mori, he's been coming in almost every game. This is totally for World Cup prep, guaranteed, because it makes our club look better. And to be honest, am I completely against that? No, I'm not. As long as it doesn't make us look like total shit, I'm okay. You know? So, I think we're probably on the same wavelength when we say Pickford, Coleman, Keane, Jagielka, Baines.
Okay? Yeah.
The only question is whether or not Funes Mori might start. But I don't think so.
I don't want to see that change of system again, because it gave the opposition so much room to exploit us.
I meant four Jagielka, actually.
Yeah.
Not three at the back.
I don't think that's a stable enough partnership.
I totally agree. That's why.
Yeah.
but that's why I don't think he's actually going to start. But I just know that if Sam it gets instructions, start him. You know what I mean? I think he would prefer Keane to go to the World Cup because that's a bigger question. He's more at risk. And that's why he's trying to pump Keane up and make him look good. And keeping him in there with Jags is the way to do it.
Yeah.
You know? So... we'll see. Gay. He's in.
Gay.
Schneiderlin.
Given his recent form, you can't fault it, can you?
You sort of have to. Then there's a question. Is Rooney healthy? If Rooney's healthy, he'll probably come back in. Last game of the season. Probably he will come back in. If not, we'll see Davies or Clawson. The fact that Clawson got a little run, will the manager try to give him more time to try to convince him not to leave? We'll see.
I don't think it'll necessarily be a start, though. I think it'll be... hopefully he'll get more minutes than he did against Southampton, but I do think Davies will start and he'll come on later on.
And then we'll probably see Vlahovic and Walcott.
Hopefully.
Yeah. If Walcott's not in, obviously Vlasi slots in. I combined the two. It's like a hybrid. You know, that's actually not a bad hybrid, though. You put those two guys together,
you got a player. Maybe a few crosses that get put into the box, then.
Vlahovic playing the wing is not particularly dangerous, is it? The only thing he really does, we feed it to him, he holds on to the ball, and he distributes. A lot of times, it's going right back where it came from. Or it's going sideways. There's not a lot of turn and go just because he's out of position.
I agree, but I also think as I've said, I think the role that he's playing as a winger just doesn't suit him at all. I think what he suits is, you know, the kind of short, sharp, right, you make a decisive, you know, choice really of what you do. You know, you either fire a ball across the 6 yard box or you have a go for goal. But with the way we play now, I think, you know, because we're focused so much on going down the flanks, I think, you know, the wingers are told, listen, you need to be able to hold on to the ball for a bit longer, look, try and assess what's going on, try and pick out any decent runs or movements. And as I said earlier, this is where the whole just playing it around the opposition's box is coming from. And as you say, it's not his forte really. I think he's the kind of guy that needs, you know, decisiveness, and he needs the, you know, you can go and express yourself, but with the, as you know, the defensive responsibility is just not where his strengths lie.
Additionally, it's hard to express yourself as much on the wing if you're not used to it, because that's a lot less space to work with.
Yeah,
you know, when you go from playing in the center out to the wing, you almost feel like your wings have been clipped a little bit. You know, it's a weird change at first if you're used to playing in the center for a while.
I said that about, I mean, it's going back a bit now. I think it was under Martinez when Ross Barkley got a stint when he got played on the wing under Martinez. I thought, you know, I mean, particularly Ross, because we know what Ross was like when we had him. You know, he couldn't make a decision to save his life, could he, really? Mm-hmm. And he can't, you know, when you're so tight to the line, there's not much more room. There's not room for error. Like, as you say, if you put them in the middle, there's a lot more space to work with and a lot more that you can get in and amongst, really.
Yeah.
But when you're so tight to the line, you're a lot more limited in what you can do. And I do agree with you. I think if we did give him a stint where, you know, we kind of put him in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would do. A lot of times you see quicker players on the flanks. Period. Vlahovic is not necessarily a quick player. I think his game is not too much unlike Ross. I don't think it's very different. I think Ross is more athletic. I think Vlahovic is smarter.
Yeah.
I think they both can carry the ball into space in the middle. I think they're both very good at that. I don't know. Who knows if Vlahovic actually gets that opportunity though? You know. I don't see it really happening in this game, but, you know, honestly, Sam has been doing some weird things with substitutions. You know, I mean, he's become
more lenient, hasn't he? Really?
Yeah,
I'd say
there's a little bit more experimentation, you know, mixed with rigid fear of loss.
Tosin up front as well, surely. I don't think it's much of a debate between him and Umar. I think we're both settled on Umar as the player to bring off the bench.
Yeah, we need Tosin to just continue getting used to the league. Just continue that experience. Get it any bit we can give him, that's the way to do it. I want to keep him happy. We need Tosin Pasha. It's got to be... There's certain ones where I immediately plug him in, and I don't even think about it. He's one of them, you know. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, are we good? Oh no, prediction. We got to predict. What are our predictions?
Give our fans something to send them home happy. You know, we've been no way two ways about it. We've been put through some shit this season. So, you know, give the lads a good go. 2-0 Everton.
Ah, once again, my friend, you are more optimistic than I am. Seeing as we are playing in a vacuum this weekend, and seeing as there's possibly zero to ride on, and zero atmosphere, and zero everything. This is what I'm thinking. I'm predicting 0-0. I'm predicting a draw. Mediocrity Bowl lives up to its name. Mediocrity Cup. I said it like it's a American football. Mediocrity Bowl on New Year's Eve. Yeah. Mediocrity Cup lives up to its name. So.
Yeah. No matter how loud our fans are going to be, you still won't be able to bloody hear them.
Nope. Told you. At West Ham, no one can hear you scream. It's pretty
So,
much the tagline for every
I
sci-fi
know.
movie ever.
I was thinking that that'd be a great heading, that, won't it?
Yeah, that's.
West Ham away, they can't hear you scream.
All right. That is it for the big show. Podcasters out there, thank you very much for listening. If you're digging what we're doing, subscribe to the Top of Boost podcast. Rate it if you can. Leave us a gentle review. That would be kind. Also, subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. We're it's over 720 now. We're slowly clicking along. Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot for your interest. Like and comment stuff. Get the conversation going. That's cool. Follow us on Twitter and all that hot stuff. Please check out Max. He's got material and analysis on the Toffee Blues website. Check out the Toffee Blues website. Other people write analysis there too. Check that out. Check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think that is it. No more plugging.
Yes.
All right. Max, thanks so much, man.
Been a pleasure, as always.
Good to talk to you. For Max, for Jerry, yeah, for the Toffee Blues. We're out.